Welcome to this edition of What's Up Bainbridge, brought to you by BARN, Bainbridge Artisan Resource Network. I'm your host, Barb Trafton, Executive Director of the Bainbridge Island Parks Foundation, here today to talk with several very knowledgeable folks about the Grand Forest. Did you know that there are three identified sections of the Grand Forest? Grand Forest East is east of the unopened Mandisilson right-of-way, the unpaved road bisecting the forest. Grand Forest West is west of Hilltop and on both sides of Miller Road, where people usually access at the Miller Road parking lot. Grand Forest North is east of Miller and south of Quora, but disconnected from east and west. All of these combine to make the Grand Forest a beloved open space park here in the heart of Bainbridge Island. This podcast invites you, the listener, to consider the future of the Grand Forest with a focus today on the Grand Forest West. This podcast is part of the community conversation organized through the Association of Bainbridge Communities Environmental Conference Series about the future of our island forests in the face of climate change. And by the way, the podcast about the pocket forest at Mauritania Preserve can also be found at Bainbridge Community Broadcasting website. Welcome to the conversation. The Parks Foundation is deeply interested in this topic because we want to help care for our public parks. And as a proud owner of public lands, you might know that on your behalf, our park district manages more acreage on Bainbridge than any other entity. Trees and connected forests, large and small, extend through all residential and business areas of Bainbridge Island. From 3,000 feet, our island looks like a forest. Tree canopies cover approximately 70% of our island. If we take a closer look, what do we really know about our island forests? At a glance, the Grand Forest is a vibrant biodiverse ecosystem, a beautiful place to get out and enjoy time on the trails. What does forest health mean here at the Grand Forest West? And what threats do climate change pose to this treasured parkland? On our panel today, I'm pleased to welcome Dan Hamlin, Director of Park Services at the Bainbridge Island Metro Park and Rec District. Among other roles, Dan oversees the management of over 1,500 acres of parkland, much of it forested, including the Grand Forest. Dan has had extensive experience in park services and is also a certified arborist. Stuart Johnson, landscape designer with AHBL, a Seattle-Tacoma multidisciplinary landscape design firm. Last year, for his thesis project in the University of Washington School of Landscape Architecture, Stuart researched three parcels on Bainbridge, including the Grand Forest, Islandwood, and Bloedel Reserve. Jared Moravec serves as the Deputy Fire Chief for the Bainbridge Island Fire Department. Over the past 29 years, he has served as responder for fire departments in Nebraska, Oklahoma, Colorado, and here in Washington. So Dan, Jared, and Stuart, thanks so much for being here today to discuss the Grand Forest West.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, Barb.
I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we gather today on the ancestral homelands of the Coast Salish peoples, who've lived in the Salish Sea Basin throughout the Salish Sea Islands and the North Cascades watershed from time immemorial. Please join me in expressing our deepest respect and gratitude for our Indigenous neighbors, the Suquamish Nation and the Port Gamble Sklallam Tribe, for their enduring care and protection of our shared lands and waterways. So Dan, tell us about the more recent history of this land. How did the forest on each side of Miller Road become the Grand Forest? And what a beautiful name.
Yeah, back in 1992, there was a community-led effort to save the Grand Forest from development. DNR was looking to sell the property, is my understanding, and would have been willing to log the property and then sell it for development into residential homes. The community didn't want to see that happen. They wanted to save this special place, 240.75 acres of just beautiful forest, as we all know. And they were able to do so and gave it over to the Park District for management. There was a second community-led effort to name the site, and this is what I'm told also, and that the name selected was obviously the Grand Forest. The other key factor about that whole effort is that the land trust was born from that effort. The folks that dedicated their time and energy to save the Grand Forest formed the what we all know as the Bainbridge Island Land Trust today. They've done so much more to preserve property on the island.
That's great to know. Thanks, Dan. And Dan, how many total acres are there in the three sections combined?
240.75 acres.
Great. It's a lot of forest and it is treasured. Here's a question for all three of you. From your personal and professional perspectives, can you describe for the listener what you see when you enter the Grand Forest from Miller Road?
Yeah, from our perspective, what we try to provide with the Grand Forest is that you can leave the hustle and bustle of everyday life, the busy road on Miller Road, park at the parking lot, enter into the Grand Forest. And as you get into the heart of the forest, you start to realize that you're in the middle of a forest in your own backyard. And it's a very special place.
That's great. Anybody else?
Yeah, from Miller Road, you kind of enter the park on top of a ridge line. You can move down into the creek bottom where Eastside Creek flows south towards Fletcher Bay. And then moving up towards Prue's House, there's a kind of a west-facing slope with some tributaries and seeps that feed that creek. So there's some diverse topography for sure. There's also just classic Northwest forest communities out there. Some somewhat dry forests, mixed evergreen hardwoods, and really lush bottom of the creek where some of the tallest trees are at, I think reaching nearly 220 feet tall.
From a firefighter's eyes, I see fuel and the potential for fire. So this isn't all that unusual. I was asked a similar question not so long ago. What do I see when I look at buildings? I was being asked by a panel of architects. I said, well, I see buildings on fire. But that's a filter that we use on the fire department to help us anticipate and plan for responses and also look at potential ways that we can provide some level of mitigation so that we can avoid any type of catastrophic event.
Mm. I love the three perspectives, and the Grand Forest is all this and more, isn't it? So Dan, why do you think this forest is so valuable to our community?
Well, there's been numerous studies conducted over the years about public services and interest in parkland and other services provided by public agencies. And open space trails have always rated extremely high. So we know that there's a love for these types of facilities. But the last year, going through the pandemic, we've seen it even more so. People have needed to be able to get out, get into the parks. They've needed those walks through the woods. To just get some kind of normalcy. And we're lucky to have it here on the island, to have so much parkland and provide that outlet through all this craziness.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I have that experience myself. And Stuart, tell us a little bit about your recent thesis project in the Grand Forest West and what you learned about the health of this particular stretch of forest.
Yeah, finishing or completing in 2020, I had the pleasure of working on a research project across the island of Bainbridge from Liddell Reserve at the north end to Grand Forest at the central location and Islandwood down at the south end of the island, really in the context of climate change, asking the questions, how can we use new technologies to help document, monitor, and characterize these forests? And, how can we overlay information to draw conclusions about potential, risks and weaknesses to the changes that we're anticipating in the climate? Out here at Grand Forest West, I had the pleasure of flying a small UAV or a little quadcopter drone over the 240 acres. Taking thousands of photos, high resolution, and stitching all these photos together and overlaying this information with other data sources, such as topography and slope and aspect and soils, and even some of the previous forest health observations from other agencies. And really looking at this layered data to identify areas of the park that may be more at risk. One of those areas that was, you know, in particular of interest was right along Miller Road at about Tolo's intersection, where a pretty densely stocked, low diversity forest exists, which is mostly kind of middle-aged Douglas fir and a history of either pathogenic or other kind of pest agents has been present on the island. So it really helped to kind of correlate data sets together and develop a protocol for monitoring and observing moving forward so that we can understand how these forests may change moving forward.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. And Dan, as manager of the Grand Forest, were any of Stuart's observations a surprise? And how might you use the additional information?
Well, the Park District is starting to look at the forest management as a facility of its own. Years ago, trails used to just kind of exist on park property and open spaces, and they became so prevalent that park agencies started to develop trail managers and people to go out and inspect the condition of the trails and start to standardize the type of trail projects. So I see that happening in forests now across, you know, the nation. There are forest managers in municipalities, obviously city arborists. But, you know, we have a unique situation here where we have a large percentage of our acreage is forest land, and we don't have a forester on staff. So that is something that our board is starting to tackle. And one of the biggest factors of that concern about wanting to get a forester on staff is what Jared brought up. It's the catastrophic loss of the forest would be devastating. So we really do need to get in and take a look at the forest. And Stuart's work is the next level of investigation of what the site conditions are like, and these models of predicting where we could go in and strategically start to make some impacts as they correlate with climate change.
Mm. Well, it's so interesting because I think as a user of the forest, as somebody who just loves to go out there and hike, you know, we see the beauty. It's harder to imagine these other perspectives or viewpoints, which leads me back to your comment, Jared, about seeing the Grand Forest as fuel. Can you tell us about your thoughts or concerns when you look at the Grand Forest?
Some concerns that I have when I look at the Grand Forest really pertain to, again, looking through it from a lens of what a fire could do to the Grand Forest if one was to occur. I've spent a lot of time hiking through the Grand Forest, east and west and up at Hilltop. And for anyone that's spent any amount of time hiking the trails there, you'll see that fire has been present. There's evidence that fire has happened there before. So one of the interesting things about being on the west side of the Cascades, it's a much wetter climate. So as such, the natural fire cycle is spread out over a much, much longer period. So we're talking hundreds of years before big stand replacing fires versus, you know, tens of years. So because of that, and because in recent history, we haven't seen any type of major fires that have happened, thank goodness, it's really easy for us to be lulled into the sense of security that, well, we're on the west side, it rains here a lot. So, you know, what are the chances that something bad could really happen? So we're really, really concerned about just overall public awareness and making sure that as Dan and Stuart have both mentioned, that we have a plan in place to be able to look at that fire risk potential and then hopefully be able to do some things within that balance that makes sense and can help lower what that risk is.
And remembering last summer's forest fires on the west side of the Cascades, what are some of those things we can do to minimize wildfire risks going forward?
So I think the biggest thing for the listeners is just having an awareness that with climate change, wildfire is something that we need to start getting used to. You're starting to hear it more every summer here, especially on the west side of the Cascades. We've had some pretty significant fires in the Puget Sound area and on the Olympic Peninsula, which isn't something that we've had on such a regular basis before. So I think that awareness is really the first step. If you explore that awareness a little bit more, really encourage folks to look to see what FireWise is all about. And FireWise is a program that takes a couple things into account to help manage that risk. The first is vegetation management through defensible space around buildings. And the second is about construction features of buildings. It's really focused on that home environment. So that's where I would direct people towards first. The other two things that people need to be aware of that can create an unnecessary risk. The first is open burning. Any type of open burning is going to have some risk associated with it. We've had pretty strict restrictions of open burning on Bainbridge Island for a couple of decades now, where really, with very few exceptions, the only thing you can burn is dry season firewood in a recreational fire, campfire type setting. And there's some caveats with that. But still, one of our big fires last summer that happened was an escaped campfire that was unattended. So really want folks to be careful with the open burning. And then the last thing is fireworks. Right. And kudos to City Council a couple of years ago for updating the city's firework ordinance to ban all consumer fireworks on the island. But fireworks are also a source of ignition. So folks can learn a whole lot more if they go to the fire department's website at bifd.org. And we have lots and lots of resources available as it pertains to wildfire and what everybody can do to help minimize that threat.
Thank you so much. Boy, we all need to brush up on this, don't we? And Dan and Stuart, as we look forward into the next 25 years or so, knowing that wildfire is sort of present in everybody's mind, what other threats will climate change present beyond wildfire?
The things we're watching are, Stuart brought them up a little earlier, in that section of the Grand Forest where we're watching some root rot move through the soil. We're seeing more pest activity. The climate changing just creates an environment that stresses the trees, which makes them susceptible to other pests and pathogens, as well as create an environment where those can thrive. So those are the things we'll be monitoring and watching in our forests.
Yeah, Dan said it well. Forest disturbance regimes will change in the new climate. My research brought me to look at available soil moisture as a big contributing factor for potential disturbances. And so identifying areas where maybe the site conditions have previously supported more moisture dependent species, where potentially soil moisture is going to decrease in the future, could result in an increase in fuel and more standing and non-standing dead trees. I think starting to kind of dial in and pinpoint some of those areas around the island using these data sets can be a way to utilize the resources very efficiently to minimize our risks.
Well, it seems as though there are areas of the Grand Forest West will some of those areas will thrive in benign neglect. And it sounds like other areas are going to need more active management, even if islanders fear the loss of, say, individual trees. So the big question is, how can the Grand Forest be managed as a healthy forest system that would be resilient to climate change? And it would be great if each of you could give sort of one big takeaway point.
Well, what we're going to be looking for from a park district standpoint is identifying those areas that need our resources. Mm-hmm. And we're going to look at that primarily from the initial work on that will be fuel load capacity. We want to make sure that we're protecting those forests from some areas where we know we have some fuel load issues, and we've been working on that for the last several years. We actually participated in a FireWise program where we received some funding through the Conservation District and did some work up on the top of Hilltop.
Right. And Jared, how about you?
Barb, as I mentioned earlier, I think this is all about balance. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy for us to swing the pendulum one way or the other, where complete hands-off is not good. Nobody wants to cut down more trees than we have to, because that's not going to create a healthy situation either. So the answer lies somewhere in the middle. And I think really the equation is that a healthy forest in this case is going to have to be a managed forest. And that means that it's going to require us all to work together to find ways to be able to help the Grand Forest be resilient in the current environment that we're in with respect to climate change.
Yeah. And Stuart, how about you? One or two big points here?
I would be looking at the species composition and distribution around the forest as the district seeks to, develop more detailed forest management plans, identifying areas where species are either thriving or new seedlings are growing up that are going to be very compatible with the future conditions is a good strategy. Along Miller Road, again, I think is an interesting situation where you have a largely Douglas fir population that has experienced Douglas fir dependent pests, but right next door and in parts intermixed there are Pinus monticola or Western white pine that is resistant to some of those pests and certainly has its own pests that are drawn to it, but is potentially going to be a good species to increase the composition level of in that area. So looking at those species, understanding are these species that have been that have grown up in this specific location moving forward going to be the best species in the same composition for the same area.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I think all of us have this intuitive sense that when you have a forest that's going to be harvested as a timber forest, it's going to be managed. And that's what DNR had here with the Grand Forest way back when. But I think all of us need to learn more as community members about what it's going to mean going forward, managing a forest that is a forest to live amongst and enjoy. So I love hearing the commonalities and also the slight differences in your perspectives. And knowing how the people of our island love the Grand Forest, one final question for each of you. How can people be a force for nature? And what actions can we as individuals take today to make a difference tomorrow?
The Park District has several programs you can participate in. But the biggest is just, communication. You're a user of the forest. You're out there, your eyes and ears. We have staff that are in there when they need to be in there, when they're assigned to do something or when they've been alerted that there's an issue. So it's really important to engage with the Park District through communication. You can get contact information off our website. And just keep us informed of what you're seeing. If something is odd, let us go check it out. We have experience and expertise, and we are also plugged into consultants and other people who have the types of experience we need in this area. And if you're a young person who's looking to get involved, we certainly have programs that would help you get educated as well as help you put your hands and feet out there in the ground and actually improving the forest. We have our Student Conservation Corps that we hope to launch again this year. With the COVID situation, we may be waiting until next year, but that will be back and we'll be back in full force. And then we also have our trails crew that gets out there and helps build these trails in a way that makes them as least an impact on the environment as possible.
Great. Thanks, Dan. How about you, Stuart? Any thoughts?
Well, as a former Washington Conservation Corps member and crew lead, I couldn't say more about the incredible opportunity that those programs provide to, one, build some skills and do some good work, but also just to give back to your community. I think those are incredible opportunities, and I encourage young people all over the island to get involved, as Dan said. I'm interested in the new technology, though. You know, my thesis was focused on drones and small unmanned aircraft. And I think there's clearly a lot of potential for using drones in not only the forest characterization and monitoring, but as I'm sure Jared could speak of, in the fire fighting and fire monitoring field as well. So, you know, the technology is becoming a lot more available to people. And I've seen some inspiring models out there for collecting data with drones and crowdsourcing the analyzing of that data via websites where photos and information can get posted, and interested community members can look for clues and, you know, provide more information based off analysis of those photos. So that's exciting to me.
Yeah, that's great. Jared, how about you?
I think there's two main things everyone should do. One is everyone needs to be informed. They need to go out, seek information, get informed about what the risks are, and what's actually going on in the forests. And there's lots and lots of resources out there for them to access. As I mentioned earlier, we have lots of wildfire resources available on the fire department's website. But just as important as being informed, you got to take it to the next step, and that's you have to take action. And as Dan mentioned, there's lots of programs with the Park District to be able to get involved. And also with the Parks Foundation to be able to get involved to help with some of that management. From a fire perspective, the fire department offers home visits where we can come out to your property and we can do a wildfire risk assessment and provide you with information and some recommendations of some things that you can do to help reduce that risk. So please be informed, and when armed with that information, make sure you do something with it and take some action.
All these great comments. I feel activated here. And I know I won't be releasing any fireworks in the Grand Forest as well. I promise. So thank you, Stuart, Jared, and Dan, so much for helping us see the Grand Forest with deeper understanding. And for the listener, if you want to know more about the future of our forests on Bainbridge, please explore the ABC Virtual Environmental Conference events taking place every Sunday in March and also recorded. You'll find info and helpful links on the Bainbridge Island Parks Foundation website and other nonprofit websites such as Islandwood, Sustainable Bainbridge, and the Land Trust. I encourage you to download this podcast and take a walk at the Grand Forest, where your observations will be enhanced by the words of our guests. We hope you'll contemplate what you see and know and take part in stewarding island forests during a time when hotter, drier summers and wetter winters are impacting forest health. Our forests will have a greater chance to thrive with community awareness and support. And thanks to our audience for listening to this episode of What's Up, Bainbridge, which is a community service brought to you by BARN, Bainbridge Artisan Resource Network.